beyond surpass, penetrating and perfect truth, itself we met with, even in 100,000 myriad helpless. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
To the Buddha, to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. If I stop and think of all the things that are scary, I can make a pretty long list. But like all such lists, it wouldn't really address what's really scary about life to most of us. And I'll tell you today what I know for myself to be the scariest thing in life. And it's not that I'm going to get old and be ill and die. It's not that I might be murdered or die in an accident. It's not that I might lose my material support and starve to death, though I don't regard any of these things as necessarily the most pleasant thing I can imagine. But what I've always found scariest, and I have to qualify that statement by saying it scared me most of the time without me knowing I was scared by it, was the fact of my freedom. It's taken me a long time to see that this essential freedom that I have is a manifestation of cosmic love beyond my comprehension. Years ago, when I was going through quite an intense period of considering my purpose for living, it came up in a surprising way that I was more afraid of living than I was of dying. As a priest, one has people come to one sometimes really asking for some direction in their life, to help with the direction of their life. And I certainly sympathize with people in this situation. At the same time, what I've always found in the end is that while I can point people back to trusting their own heart, I have to be very careful not to play God and not to try to tell people how to live their life. I mean, sometimes if you know someone's doing something that's really self-destructive, you can say, well, you know, you might stop doing that. But generally, that's not the main issue when someone asks this kind of question of a priest. Rather, it's there's confusion and a person feels torn in two or more directions. And that's where so often the best advice is simply to be still and turn within for a while and allow the turmoil that is caused by one's agitation about one's freedom of choice to subside. And then to allow the Eternal to get a word in edgeways. It is not that we're without the help of the Eternal at any time in our lives. And yet, if we will not put first things first spiritually, we're bound to end up being very confused and not knowing where to turn for the Eternal's help. And the Eternal's guidance. It may be because this has been such an issue for me in my life that those five aspects of meditation I so often refer to came up for me in 1998. Because while you really can't say it's a method, it certainly is good advice for someone like me. Someone who wanted very much to follow his heart and so many times acted impulsively. Willfully. So you start by acknowledging your need for help and for asking for help. Then you open your heart to that help in offering. And you sit still, patiently waiting. And allowing your heart to listen to the Eternal. Then when all conditions ripen and it's time to make a move, then you can take one sure step. Before one acts, one has gone through this process in which self is got out of the way. The turmoil has subsided. The passions have quieted. The confusion, the cloud of confusion that we ourselves generate by our thrashing around and our impulsiveness has a chance to disperse. And then that next step is at least intuitively clear. And I say that because in my own experience, so often I take that step without knowing why I'm doing it. Except that, as I sometimes say, the green light has gone on. Intuitively, I sense it's time to take a step, and this is it. In this direction. And even then, if you were to say, well, are you sure you're doing the right thing? I'd look at you and say, well, I'm not even sure that's a valid question. All I know is I'm doing the best I can. And we'll leave what's the right thing, what's the wrong thing for someone else to decide. One thing I do know from my experience is that I can be wrong. I can take a misstep. And I don't want to do that. The fact of our essential freedom can be paralyzing for some people, and perhaps for all of us at times. To live in such a paralysis is to live a kind of living death, really. To subside in a kind of negative passivity. And to really waste precious time. Regardless of whether one knows what the next external move should be, what is good to do in one's next step, one can still train oneself in the present moment. One can still meditate in the present moment. One can still offer in the present moment. One can ask for help in the present moment. One can take refuge in the stillness within, in the present moment. One can listen in the present moment. There's a ton to do. And it all really comes down to pure meditation. River Master had a bumper sticker on her car. Don't just do something, sit there. That's what it said. And that sitting there is hard work. There is no easy path through life. There is no easy route to spiritual adulthood. One has to pay one's dues. One has to put in one's time doing the hard spiritual work. And one has to make choices at times in which to go one path is not to go another. It is not a solution to the essential problem posed by our freedom to think that you can do it all. That you can have something of everything, some part of every path. Life doesn't work that way. When you're ill, you're ill, and you're not well. When you die, you're dead, and you're not alive. When you live, you're alive, and you're not dead. If you're a monk, you're a monk, and you're not a lay trainee. If you're a lay trainee, you're a lay trainee, and you're not a monk. If you're married, you're married. You're not single. If you're single, you're single. You're not married. If you have children, you have children. And you don't not have children. If you don't have children, you don't have children. you can't be a little bit pregnant, as the saying goes. You're either pregnant or you're not. If you have a brain tumor, you have a brain tumor. If you don't have one, you don't have one. Don't try to approximate the all is one with your will. It doesn't work. The all is one takes care of itself. We don't have to worry about it. None of the things that I just described are the essential reality. That's the truth of the all is one. The eternal is. And it's always our refuge. The love of the eternal floods equally over all existence and through all existence and does not distinguish on the basis of any external thing. It loves the criminal as well as the saint. It loves the married person as well as the single, the lay trainee as well as the monk, the Christian as well as the Buddhist. The soldier as well as the civilian. That love exists in that way is wonderful beyond our power to imagine or describe or conceive. And I have to live my life, make my choices, and take the consequences thereof. These two don't stand against one another. They're two aspects of one truth. All is one and all is different. That freedom that can be so frightening is the bodhisattva's playground. It is the bodhisattva's playground when there's an unconditional yes rather than an I want or I must have. When there's an unconditional, not my will but thine, please show me the way. And still, one can never be complacent. That freedom has teeth in it. And all of us get the occasional reminder. That spurs us on to take refuge more deeply, to listen more carefully, to follow more willingly. Our master used to say, the real truth does not insist on truth. The love of the eternal does not force itself upon us. And as I see it, our essential freedom, our freedom of choice that we have, is an expression of that love that does not force itself upon the beloved. It's always there, supporting, leading the way, offering help, and it does not force itself. We must come to it willingly. Suffering of our life takes place within this context and derives its meaning from this context. fact that we suffer doesn't mean that we're less free. The fact that we suffer shows us the consequences of what we and others in our stream of karma have done with their freedom. In America, we think we love freedom, and in a certain way we do. But it's also true that we don't really know freedom as a culture any more than any other culture knows freedom. Because the essential freedom is not cultural, it's spiritual. And no cultural ideal of freedom can take the place of our training responsibly within the context of our true spiritual freedom.
Amen.